Measure ins, reel three. Now, in about the 56-57 period, you were operating in Cyprus against AOKA. Can you tell me how you came to be there, please?
Yes, I after the Korean War, as I said, told you, we went to Gibraltar, and I was due for a staff appointment. So I, after about a year in Gibraltar with the battalion, I was posted to be the G2 at Fortress Headquarters in Gibraltar. And after, at the end of my 2-year stint doing that, I had to rejoin the battalion, who by that time had gone to Malta to support the what was going to happen in Egypt, virtually, during the invasion in Suez Canal. And so I managed to get the air officer commanding in Jib to push me into a Shackleton and fly me to Malta, at 50 feet the whole way from Gibraltar to Malta. And I went to rejoin the battalion from Jib that way. And after a short time in Malta, the battalion moved en bloc to Cyprus, just before the actual invasion of Egypt. And I remember very, very well all the French paratroops were in Cyprus at the time, and they actually took off from there to go to Canal Zone, to Suez, in fact.
Where were you based in Cyprus?
Port Said, rather, not Suez. Yeah. I was in just north of Nicosia, just outside Nicosia, in fact, a place called Kermia. And there was a tented camp there we had there. And we were never actually going to go to the Canal Zone. We just went to relieve troops that went from the canal, from Cyprus, for the Canal Zone, and take over their duties, really, of the doing the in the EOCA operations.
What was your job with the unit?
I was a company commander with the Duke of Wellington's Inn, and
do you remember the name of the company?
I think it was D Company, I think. Anyway, I went to spent our most of our time up in the Trudos Mountains, chasing General Grievous around the place. And we thought at one time we'd actually got him, and it turned out afterwards that we really had, but we didn't know it. But we had various little skirmishes with terrorists and that sort of thing, trying to capture them. They were all gone to ground, most of them, in the mountains, and you'd find their hides sometimes, you know, and manage to rustle them out and capture them.
What did the hides consist of?
Well, they were underground, like a little dugout, really, you know, with people living there, and they were so well camouflaged, they're very difficult to find. And I think we started doing the same sort of thing ourselves, quite a bit, and trying to ambush them, perhaps going from A to B, you know, and we certainly had a certain amount of success, anyway, in capturing one or two terrorists, and whatever became of them afterwards, I don't know. But,
are there any incidents that stick out in your mind that you can describe?
You just turn it off for a moment. There was nothing very exciting about it all, but spending long periods up in the mountains, and very often going to ground oneself for about a week, perhaps, to try and ambush terrorists moving from one place to another. But it was when you went to ground like this, of course, you couldn't move about openly, and you had to close the whole area, which was very difficult because the Trudos Mountains are a large area, and it you get locals wandering around, and you didn't know who they were either, and they might have been terrorists, they weren't, probably weren't, but it was very difficult for them as well. Anyhow, I think we managed quite a good operation in the end, and we had successes out there. Caught the odd terrorist, but nothing spectacular. And I one time we really did think we'd got General Grievous, but we didn't realise it at the time, and we had actually got him, really.
How could you distinguish between a civilian and...
Well, this was the problem. I mean, you couldn't. This was the great problem. I mean, you had to advertise the fact that the place was going to be closed. And you had to then assume that people... It was very difficult.
Would they have anything on them to...
Well, they probably had... I mean, they'd obviously have, I suppose, some sort of Cyprus identity, but... Anyhow, I mean, so would a terrorist as well. They wouldn't. No, it was a difficult operation, really.
Were there ever any accidents?
Yes, we did have the odd accident. We had one officer killed, in fact, by walking into one of our own patrols one night.
Was he shot dead?
Yeah, he was. Yes. A National Service officer at that, I think, too, if I remember rightly. Rather fine chap.
Were you there at the time?
No, I wasn't there at the time, no. But I did have one, this is an incident did happen to me. It's nothing to do with terrorists or anything, but I had in my company, in one morning, our water truck driver drove his water truck over the mountainside and dropped about 500 feet and killed himself. And later that morning, I had a soldier who was unloading his rifle, and he killed the chap next door to him while they were unloading the thing. And I thought, my goodness, I'm going to be in for terrible trouble over this. And before I knew where I was, I had a message on the radio that the brigadier wanted to see me. And he was sending a helicopter for me to pick me up. And I thought, my goodness, what? I'm really going to be told, relieved of my appointment or something. But in fact, when I arrived at brigade headquarters in the helicopter, he came out to the helicopter to meet me and said, I thought, after what had happened this morning, Dick, he said, I thought perhaps you needed a really strong gin. Which I thought this was a good sign of leadership. You're probably right, too.
What were relations like with the Greek Cypriots?
Pretty good, really, I think, yes. They're quite a nice lot, actually. I think on the whole, though, we preferred the Turks. I think one preferred to be in a Turkish village than to a Greek village, but on the other hand, they were okay, you see.
Why were the Greek, Turkish Cypriots so special?
Well, I don't know if they were so special, but I think one somehow got on a bit more with them. I think they were more inclined to help you. I think the Turkish and the British have always had respect for one another. And,
did any of the Greeks say, why don't you leave this country?
I don't think the locals bothered us too much over that sort of thing. We hardly saw very much of them, you see. We were, as I say, up in the mountains most of the time. And the only time we really, I suppose, had any proper liaison with them was when we were back in camp around Nicosia, where, of course, one probably did see quite a lot of the Greeks then. And,
what about searches of their villages?
Yes, they were pretty good there. I mean, they accepted it, you know. I mean, yes, we often used to cordon a village early in the morning and search them and that sort of thing. But they accepted it. They weren't too bad, I don't think, really. I have no recollection of them being very anti, put it that way.
Was any damage done to what they owned?
One tried not to. Of course, it's bound to happen that if you're searching a house is the problem, because terrorists would be up in the roof and that sort of thing, you know, and you had to sort of move things around a bit very often to search it properly. But one had to be careful, of course. And on the whole, I think we're probably better than most at doing that sort of thing. I think we treat people's possessions with a bit more discretion than perhaps some countries would.
Was there any danger to you if you went into the towns, say shopping or something like that?
Oh yes, we were definitely only allowed. You had to go out, if I remember rightly, in fours, I think. They wouldn't allow. I mean, you were not allowed to go out of the sort of immediate area into the town areas and that sort of thing unless you were in fours. And if you went out in transport at all, you had to go in two vehicles at a time. Oh well, I mean, there were terrorists out to get you. Of course, it was no matter where it was.
Did you come across that yourself?
Not really. I didn't think. No. No, not there. No. I did in Palestine, which I haven't mentioned there. You probably just one's bit there in the Secret Service early on.
This was 47-48.
Yeah, that's right, yes. I was in Palestine with 6th Airborne Division after I left India. I was one night out in the Hedda Carmel in Haifa with another officer, and we were having a drink in a restaurant cafe there, and I was sitting at the bar, and one officer on my right and somebody else on my left, I forget, but the officer on my right was wounded, the chap on my left was killed, and it was done by a terrorist shooting through the window, sprayed his machine gun. That's the only time I've ever come across terrorists actually doing anything like that.
Where was that?
That was in Haifa in 1947, I suppose.
This was a cafe?
In a cafe, yeah.
Or a restaurant?
Yeah, I think it was a restaurant, actually, with a bar and kind of sort of... Yes, a restaurant, I suppose.
What was the first thing you knew about that?
Well, the first thing I knew was when we were shot at. Chap did it from a window, you see, outside.
Was it an automatic weapon?
Oh, yes, it was an automatic, a sub-Thompson machine gun, in fact. That's the only time I've ever come across that sort of thing. Frightening at the time.
Did you see the man who did it?
No, not really. No, he'd gone, you see, but I mean, your immediate reaction actually is to help the chap who's been hit.
Was it just British people who were killed?
Yeah.
Were there any
one killed, that was all. A chap next door to me. But I was missed out in the middle. He obviously sprayed the thing, but... So, that's the only time I've ever known that, I think.
Were there just British in the restaurant?
Oh, I think there must have been... it was a Jewish restaurant, so there must have been Jews in it, I think, yes.
Were any of the Jews at?
Don't think so, no. I can't really remember, but I don't think so.
Any other incidents of that nature happened to you in Palestine?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you were always very wary of moving around that something was going to happen, but if you took the right precautions, hopefully one missed it.
Were your operations in Palestine exactly the same nature as in Cyprus?
Similar, I would say. Cyprus, when we were in Palestine, was a haven of rest. hadn't happened in Cyprus then. One used to go to Cyprus on leave, you know, that sort of thing. But, yes, I suppose it was... Yes, it was more, I think, that the... It was really an Arab-Jewish thing, more in Cyprus, in Palestine. And we were there to really to sort of keep the mandate until it finished, you know, and try and sort of sort the thing out. But and I actually left almost on the day the mandate ended. I think that was the 15th of May, 1948, wasn't it? Yes.
Any incidents when you left?
No, not at all. Not at all.
What about the effectiveness of the Zionist gangs as compared to the Ayoka gangs?
There's no doubt about it. The Jewish terrorists were very clued up. I mean, they were very cruel, of course, too. I mean, they strung up British soldiers and that sort of thing if they got hold of them, you know, and strung them up on trees, and they were very cruel. And, you know, the only other thing I think I did was to attend the hanging of a Jewish terrorist at Acca jail as a result of a trial and, you know, being found guilty of murder, virtually.
Why should you have attended that?
Well, I think they had to have a witness, and I was handy or something at the time. But,
how was that conducted?
Well, just conducted like a hanging in this country, if we had one now. I don't think Pierpont came out to do it, but he used to do sometimes, I know, to come out from England to do these hangings.
Was it done efficiently
not? Oh, yes, very efficiently, yeah. There's a doctor there to certify I'm dead and that sort of thing.
How much pain did the victim suffer?
Instant.
What was his demeanour?
That's the only one I saw. Very aggressive, rather, I think, really, to the last.
You mean shouting?
Yes, not exactly shouting, but, showing a determined sort of aggression.
Was he a Jew?
No, it was a Jew, yes.
Was he given any last request?
Oh, I don't think it was even contemplated at that stage of the proceedings. He might, no doubt, was given that before he appeared on the scaffold, I think.
Now, in 1961, you were in the Congo crisis.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, that came about because in 1959, having just closed down the Duke... I was the last CO of the Duke of Wellington's regimental depot at Halifax, and having just closed it down, I was then asked if I would like to second to the Nigerian army as a brigade major on the... one of their brigades, and so I went out to Cyprus to the Lagos area, and after I'd been there about 2 years, the Congo business blew up, and the Nigerians agreed to send a brigade to the Congo. To the Lulaberg area, it was, the Congo. And I went there. I think we changed around, roughly speaking, every 6 months. We did a 6 month tour there. And I was on the second tour that the Nigerians had. So they were already pretty well established when I went out there in Lulaberg. And it was really a very interesting time in my life, I think, because there were very few, on the whole, very few British involved in the Congo. they were mainly the officers in the Nigerian and Ghanaian battalions. The Irish actually did send a battalion out there, and we had the Irish battalion under command of the Nigerian Brigade. Can we stop for a minute?
What kind of, as it were, enemy forces were in the area?
Well, they weren't exactly enemy forces. What had happened was, you see, in the Congo, that the Belgians had walked out, lock, stock and barrel, and the highest grade of person left behind in the government and local civil government was that of a chief clerk. And the present president of Zaire, as it is now, Mobutu, was in fact a chief clerk in the education corps of the Belgian army. And so he was probably one of the more intelligent chaps out there. And I got to know him quite well, actually, because he then sort of gradually promoted himself up and became the Congolese army commander and all that sort of thing. And I got to know him quite well. How he's managed to remain there all this time, I can't think, but he has. And our problem there, I really don't quite know what it was. You got a lot of, I don't know, people trying to take, I suppose, manage the government, who weren't capable of doing it. This was really the trouble, I think. And it's an enormous country, the Belgian Congo. It's the size of France. I mean, I beg your pardon, it's got six states, I think it is, or whatever you like to call them, each the size of France. So it's an enormous country. And no communications at all, except by air, airstrips. All the roads finished at the local airstrip. You might have a track going on after that, but not one that you could put vehicles down or anything like that. And it was a very, very difficult situation. So you went, you found pockets of people would only be where there was an airstrip, probably a mission or something like that there. Roman Catholic mission, probably, or something of that sort. And one came across all sorts of little tribes of people, pygmies, for example, who were marvellous people. And if you put down their village in a helicopter, they were absolutely, I mean, the great thing was to take them up for a flight. They loved it. They'd never seen probably a helicopter before in their life. And it was a very, very odd situation, but one had awful situations where the Congolese army got into convents and raped all the nuns and that sort of thing, and that's the sort of thing one had to deal with, which made it difficult because it was their country, and you know what the United Nations are about retaliation and that sort of thing. Although I think one had a bit more power out there than one they seem to have in Bosnia. I think we seem to make the law our own rather more than...
Did you actually find a nunnery in which this had happened?
Well, yes, one did get involved in it, and one had to try and talk, do something about it. And I don't know that we ever actually fired a shot in anger, but we jolly nearly did on several occasions. I think the threat was there that we would. And
what did the nuns say to you?
Oh, the nuns, I mean... Well, distress, of course, really. I mean, but they were quite strong characters, of course. Mostly Belgian, of course. They weren't Congolese or anything. I don't know. It's sort of counselling them, really, when it happens, I think.
Had any of them been killed?
I don't remember any being killed, actually. But I do remember we got word that there was a cannibal in one of the villages, and we went out to get him one day. And when we got there, we found he'd done a bunk, in fact. But we found his residence, and he was quite civilized in that he had a refrigerator and all that sort of thing, and he had human joints in his refrigerator. But I think they did get him in the end. And, he was really quite a civilized chap, really, compared to most of them.
What did the Nigerians think of the Congolese? Was there any fellow African feeling?
I don't think there was, really. Nigerians were pretty good, I must say. They're a good name. We had an Irish battalion too in the thing. They were a bit hairy, I must say.
In what sense?
Well, I must not say too much. I don't think they were as disciplined as you might expect them to be. This is a long time ago, though. I think things have changed rather since then. What's the name of that country where it freed American freed slaves?
Liberia.
We had a Liberian battalion there. They were under our command as well, and they were absolutely incredible. They had absolutely no discipline whatever. I can hardly describe to you what it was like. I remember my brigadier and I went to visit their battalion on one occasion. And we arrived to find the commanding officer in bed with some Congolese girl. and that was generally, the rather better side of them, I suppose. Goodness gracious. And they really had no discipline at all. They had no administration, as far as one could see. And they expected us to do it all for them, you know.
What kind of administration?
Well, they hardly had knew how to administer themselves at all. We had to sort of support them, you know. And,
you mean getting supplies?
Yes, all that sort of thing, yes. They were quite useless, they really were. They were a liability, in fact. So we put them in a place miles away where they couldn't do much harm.
How much do you think your unit achieved?
Well, I think we kept the peace, put it that way, quite well, really. Until the Congo finally took it over themselves, really. Until I've forgotten when it actually finished now, the Congolese situation.
Was there any faction fighting in your area?
No, I don't think so. No, not really.
Where is Lulu about Borg?
It's more or less the centre of the Congo. It's on the Lulaberg River. And, of course, one gets the idea that it's all jungle. And of course, it isn't. There's wonderful plains, lovely countryside. It's not all...